psychology, basically, it's based in the root. The psyche means is actually the soul. But in your modern psychology and philosophies, they can't actually tell the difference between the soul and the mind. They're taken as the same. So basically, the study is to be able to make this difference. Because if this difference is made, then we're able to deal nicely with our own personal development. So, we'll find both that what is being discussed is very familiar, at the same time as taken in the context where you're just discussing about the mind, that's being the central feature, then it will appear as its own topic. Right? Just like you're discussing the form of the universe, how it functions, its relationships with everything, and all that. If we look at it from that way, we call it creation. But if we look at it on how that same pattern affects our own, our particular body, then we'll call that Ayurveda. But it's actually the same topic, the same discussion. It's just a specific application. So here now, the mind, then the tendency is that either we're thinking we have to conquer this mind. So this element of conquering means it will stop. Right? It's bothering us, it's coming up with all kinds of stuff that we don't appreciate. Stuff we do appreciate, we don't think about as stuff that we have to deal with. But it's an idea is that we have to stop this mind. Then, or we just ignore it. We're chanting, we don't worry about it. But in both these cases, a point is, a very important point is being missed, is that the mind is real. And that is what actually we need to deal with in Krishna consciousness. Right? Its particular projection of what is real, that's an illusion. But the mind itself is real. Right? It's as real as earth, water, fire, all these different elements. Right? It's one of the elements. And it's factually the one element of these eight that makes all the other seven work. Right? The gross material energy is being identified and is moving and is working because of the mind. Right? So factually, what we're dealing with here is desire. That's the central point in dealing with the mind. So this desire then is what needs to be, that is what is being controlled, not the mind. This idea that the mind's going to stop and go away, that's not going to happen. It's a matter of what is the mind doing in its, you know, constant, inner dialogue. Right? That the mind is constantly babbling on and on and on about something. Right? So the idea is that this then must be properly connected. So basically in this study, Sotomar is basing this on two verses, two purports that Srila Prabhupada gives, and then 5 points within that to break it down. Everything else in the book then is an elaboration or expansion on this. So these purports is the 326.31 and 328.7. So in the first one, since mind is a product of the mode of goodness, it is fixed upon the Lord of the if it is fixed upon the Lord of the mind, Aniruddha, then the mind can be changed to Krishna consciousness. It is stated by Narottam Das Thakur that we always have desires. Desire cannot be stopped. But if we transfer our desires to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is the perfection of life. As soon as the desire is transferred to lording it over material nature, it becomes contaminated by matter. Okay. And then, so that's 326.31. The second one is, the essential point is that the mind, which is contaminated by material attraction, has to be bridled and concentrated on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's 328.7. Okay. So now these 5 points that we gain from this. Then one, the essential substance of the mind is the mode of goodness, which is the energy of Lord Aniruddha, who is the localized supersoul feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now, in these then, we've heard this. This is not new. It's philosophy. And we'll take it that that's philosophy. What's that got to do with psychology? Right? But we have to understand is that psychology, in the modern sense, is considered as a separate subject simply because modern psychologists can't tell the difference between the soul and the mind. Because psyche means the soul in Greek. It doesn't mean the mind. But people think the mind is myself. And so that's why then it becomes the subject as such. And we'll think, oh, it's something different. If I really want to understand psychology, I have to go to these modern psychologists. But actually, we have much more like that. So here then, in breaking this down, is this element of the mind is coming from the mode of goodness. The essential substance is the mode of goodness. It's very important. Because mode of goodness is what is maintaining this world. Right? You have passion creates, ignorance destroys. Goodness maintains. So the essential point of the mind is maintenance. Because it's the mind that maintains our material existence. Right? Because of the mind, we're in the material world. The mind changes its focus. We're not in the material world anymore. We're in the spiritual world. Right? This is the point of why it's brought in line. Okay, that will come up. So, but on the mode of goodness, it's the energy of Aniruddha, who's the supersoul. It's the supersoul who is taking care of everything. Right? The environment has been created by Sankarshan. The attractiveness to that environment is Prajumna. Right? So the whole establishment or whole identity that we have here is then based upon ignorance. Right? Because Sambandha in the material world represents ignorance. Right? In the spiritual world, the sat potency, which represents relationship, is eternality. But here, it's temporary. So it's ignorance. It's just a reflection. So this identity with ignorance, then this is your basis, but it's that basis is being maintained by the mode of goodness, where Supersoul is there in sanctioning the desires that the living entity has. Right? So we can see is then this whole clue here is that transferring the desires to the Lord is actually how it must be. That gets us out of material consciousness. It's not something else. And bridled means it's simply brought in line, it's controlled, it's directed. It doesn't say it's stopped. It doesn't say take the mind and stick it in a box and then put that in a bucket with cement and then dump it into the Hudson River. Right? It doesn't say that. It says that it's bridled. Right? Horses do a lot. They're very active, but they work well when they're bridled. Because they're directed. It doesn't say stopped. Because the mind is going to say, this has to stop. No, it has to be redirected. This is why we suffer, because we try to stop it rather than redirect it. Because you can't stop it. Yes?
Questions now or at
the end? Anytime.
So, in the analogy of
the horse... Yeah, just as long as it's relevant to the
horse. In the analogy of the horse, there's the understanding that you also have to first break the horse before you can actually put the thing
yes.
And make it happen.
Yes.
So how does that reverse?
How does that breaking? Yeah. That breaking is actually, is that understood, the point? It means if we're going to bridle a horse, first you have a wild horse. If you want to bridle it, then the English term is you have to break it. Which means that it has to give up the idea of it's wild, but now that it's a horse under someone's control. Basically, that just defined it there. It's just that we accept that the mind is a real thing that we work with, and it's not us. Basically, as soon as that's done, then it's something we can deal with very straightforward, and at the same time as we can deal with it without ourselves becoming implicated. The difficulty is the more we identify with the mind, then the more we have a tendency to be unable to analyze it and work with it. Because as soon as we analyze it, desire and attachment comes up. As soon as that comes up, we think this is us. As soon as that's us, then we're distracted. Right? So in other words, we become bridled. The mind bridles the consciousness and drives it where it wants, when it should be the other way around. So this whole introduction that Maharaj is giving is basically, the foundation of the work, but is basically giving the whole ideas that we're not the mind, but the mind is real. Like that. And our whole existence is based actually simply on our mind. Nothing else. It's not something else that keeps us in the material world. Right? The body doesn't keep us here. Right? You know, we have to do a lot of work to actually stay in the body, right? You know, it means you have to breathe, you have to drink water, eat food, you have to, you know, stay out of the way of Mack trucks. So many things you have to do to stay in the body, right? But the mind, wherever you go, it goes with you. So that's actually the real central feature.
So the point which makes it work is not how much effort you put into breaking the mind, but the understanding that the soul is superior to the mind, because by just fighting it with brute force...
No, this is the whole point, is the brute force won't work. It's a matter of the mind is based on desire. And we have this idea that we have to get rid of desire. No, we don't have to get rid of desire, we have to change the desire. Because right now desire is to lord it over material energy. And the mind is the central feature of that. It has the desires, it has all the ideas, right? Maharaj gives so many examples of that. Means we have so many things that we can see, but the mind can generate stuff. We can close our eyes and the mind can generate stuff we want. You know, you can go in, you know, you completely hide, but it'll generate. Because anything it's taken in the past, it can bring up again. And it has the ability by samasthi to stick together all kinds of things, create stuff that don't even exist. And we want it. You know, that's the thing. So the whole idea is that it's a matter of changing desire, redirecting that desire. So therefore he mentions that it's if it's fixed upon the Lord of the mind, Aniruddha. In other words, Krishna is the Lord of desire. Right? An attachment. Yes.
Another approach also against breaking the mind, it would be like the case of the Mayavadi that actually personally thinks that it has the mind under control, because it's actually the ultimate goal of I am controlling everything, and actually that will lead to think the, against the principle of that actually surrendering the mind, which is a constant eternal.
Yeah, it's the controller, yeah. Because the bottom line is that we've come into this world because we think we're the controller and enjoy it. So, because the mind wants that, it gives us a false identity. So the Mayavadi somehow or another very cleverly throw out all the stuff that seemingly is material desire, but keep the essential point, which is I am the controller and enjoyer. You know, so that's the interest. You know, it's like, you know, you get rid of the bank, you know, all the marble, all the counters, but keep the money. You know, so there's no, you know, the bank's gone, so now all the Maya's gone, but we still have the money. You know, so this is the. So yeah, okay. The second point then, when that sattvika mental substance is dedicated to the Lord, it is transformed to Krishna consciousness, the state of infallible goodness above the three modes of material nature. So we can see here is that it's a transference. One is trying to bring the mind from engaging in material pursuit to spiritual. That doesn't necessarily mean changing the activity. This is also sometimes misunderstood, stemming from the impersonal idea that spiritual must be the opposite of material. But actually, material is not being able to perceive the spiritual. It's not opposite things. It's means it's like night is the lack of light. If there's light, there is no night. It's not opposite things as such. You know, as a force. Night is not a force that is fighting with the daytime and, you know, covering it. No. It just doesn't exist if there's day. So if the spiritual consciousness is there, there is no Maya. There is no ignorance. Right? It's just, you know, it means we put it on the, you know, the front, you know, page of our BTG, this very point, right? Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hoy Andhakar. It means what is there? Krishna is sun, and he is light, and Maya is darkness. So where there's Krishna, there is no darkness. Right? That's the whole idea, right? You see the whole logo, there's darkness, but Lord Chaitanya is bringing this light. Right? And so then, therefore, it is being able to be appreciated. So through, yeah. So it's a matter of transforming, right? This is our philosophy, is transforming. This is what was it? That's Parinama, right? Parinamavad. It's transform. You have the spiritual, but because of polluted consciousness, it transforms into material consciousness, right? While the Mayavadis, their idea is Vivartavad, which means that it's just an illusion, it doesn't exist. So they'll say the mind doesn't exist, but keep the idea that I am God. Right? So it doesn't make any sense. So the whole idea is we have to be very careful that we're not caught up in this. Right? Third point, to dedicate the mind to the Lord, we must channel the flow of our desires towards His lotus feet. Hence, there is no question of controlling the mind, fixing the mind, pacifying the mind without the reformation of desire. Our quality of mind is subject to the quality of our desire. So simply it is the desire. Right? And that's the best part about it, is desire is starting from ourself, from the soul. Right? So when there's atato brahma jigyasa, then the desire changes. When the desire changes, that will change then the flow of the mind. Right? So the water is moving. It's a matter of directing it to where it's useful. Right? So much water is there in a city, and if it moves according to the natural flow, everyone is benefiting. If it doesn't go according to that, you know, it comes down the side of the mountain, and all those people in the fancy houses, you know, end up down, you know, in walks. So it's a problem. Yes?
Maharaj, I was wondering, can the mind's activities be divided into Bhagavat, Pancharatrik, and Vedic?
Can the mind's activities be divided as Bhagavat, Vedic, Bhagavat, Pancharatrik, and Vedic? In one sense, you can. You wouldn't, means, as a psychological definition, you might not use the terms, but the subject matter will be the same. Your Bhagavat is your pure consciousness or focusing on the Lord in its natural, spontaneous form, right, of attraction and affection. Your Pancharatrik will mean that the mind appreciates that the Lord is the center of all, you know, activity, but it doesn't naturally flow that way, so it accepts to be bridled and directed, therefore, exclusively at the lotus feet of the Lord. Right? The Vedic will mean that the mind may or may not accept that the Lord is supreme, but there is such a thing as an upward direction. There is such a thing as better and worse. So, therefore, and that better and worse is defined by scripture, by authority, not speculative. And therefore, authority says one must be progressive and one must voluntarily control oneself to actually be a better controller and enjoyer. Right? So, therefore, one agrees to be controlled. So you're in the proper form of Krishna consciousness, though you're not necessarily Krishna conscious. Because when you add Krishna consciousness to it, that's your Daivavarnashram, which technically, if it's done properly, is Pancharatra. Right? Then that naturally then gives rise, by purification, to the spiritual, the Bhagavad. Because the Vedic, its actual purpose is to bring one in back in line with the Lord and free one from material consciousness. Bhagavad is not a matter of freeing from material consciousness. There isn't any. Pancharatrik, technically, there is, but it's being so absorbed in the Lord's service that it doesn't really feature. As long as you follow the rules and absorb yourself in the process, there basically is no mundane. But Vedic is taking mundane as very much a reality. If you're absorbed in, you know, the preaching or in the you know, some variety of hearing and chanting, or in the deity worship or things connected with the deity in the temple, and you're completely satisfied, no other desires, then between the Bhagavat and the Pancharatrik, everything's taken care of. You don't have to worry. One doesn't need to go further. Because all the essential means Vedic is the reflection of the natural form of Bhagavad in the spiritual world. Right? In the mirror, it's the reflection, it's the cultural reflection. And the essential points of the Bhagavad have been pulled out as the Pancharatra. Right? Pancharatra is Vedic rules that are either directly or supportive of worshipping Vishnu. Right? And if it's broader than that, then that's what we call the Vedic culture. So its purpose is the same, but it's just a matter of these stages. So the Vedic can bring one to the liberated platform and, you know, take one in the direction of the Supreme Lord, because to get liberated means you have to be going towards the Lord. The Pancharatra will focus specifically on the Lord. And then the Bhagavat will develop that natural, how you say, you know, spontaneous love. Does that make sense? That's, is that clear? Is that, what's it? Yes.
When we follow this nine process of pure devotional service, doesn't mean that we don't want to listen to mind anymore.
We don't want to listen to the mind.
You don't have time.
You don't have time. Yes.
Else.
That's there. But the problem is if you can do that, that is great. And that's what we're trying to do. That's the second recommendation. First recommendation is pure unalloyed devotional service starting this nanosecond. If that doesn't work, then you take up what you just said. If that doesn't work, then you start with the Vedic process. This is what Krishna says. So the reality is it means, it's like this. Do you need to be married to chant Hare Krishna? No. Do you need to be married to worship the deity? No. So people need to get married. So what are we dealing with here? Right? They need to get married. They have to have children. They want to have their house. They want to have their money. They need their prestige. People fight over, I mean, it's like you have an opening for a temple president. In a major temple, there can be a lot of politics. Why is that there? Because of this nine processes? No, because of the pure, unalloyed, mundane conditioning of the mind. Right? That's what then has to be addressed. Because what will happen, what Maharaj points out, is people will finesse that it exists. Oh, I'm not making politics. I'm just trying to do my service. So, which in one sense is true. That is their conscious effort. But the subconscious effort is to control and enjoy. If I am the temple president, I am in control here. That means things will go the way I want them to. That means my enjoyment will be unimpeded. Right? That's unconscious. Right? So how to identify that if it's there? I'm saying, if it's not there, then there's not a problem. It's only a problem where it is there. So to be able to accept that that concept is there and to be able to identify and work with it, that's what we're studying here. Is, in other words, we're not afraid to deal with the mind because we don't identify with it.
We can reject. I don't want to be...
You cannot reject because right now you're using words. Where did those come from? Where did the concept come from that I should reject? Because accepting and rejecting is what the mind's done. So that you've rejected it means you're using your mind.
No, Maharaj, by intelligence.
But intelligence simply tells you that, you know, this is a rock, this is a kamandalu, and this is a book. That's all the intelligence tells you. And it'll tell you that from the book you can read and get knowledge, from this you can get water, and from this I can hold down the page of the book or throw at somebody who, you know, I want to get their attention or I don't like. You know? But what you want to do, that's the mind. The intelligence, that's why it says bridled. The mind is controlled by the intelligence. But you're not going to get rid of the mind. That's the whole point the Myers is making. We just finesse the mind, and it wreaks havoc, and we just won't accept that that's what's making the trouble. The point is the mind is the best friend or the worst enemy. It's the best friend when it's connected to Krishna, and it's the worst enemy when it's not. But you're not going to get rid of the mind. It's not a matter of rejecting it, closing it down, putting it in a room, locking it, throwing away the key. It doesn't work. It is the central feature of your active interaction with other living entities. It's all based on the mind.
We have choice to follow mind dictation.
Yes, but where does the choice come from? Who makes the choice?
Intelligence?
No.
No?
No.
And who?
The soul in connection with the mind. This is the point where we're trying to make. Intelligence doesn't make a distinction. Okay, which of these two rocks is bigger? This one. Okay, so that's what the intelligence can do. Now, which is better? That's the mind. Depends what you want to do. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that the mind is not going to go away. And we don't need it to go away. We just have to redirect it towards the Lord.
But that's my point. Nine process, devotional service is the...
Yes, no, but you're just taking, I do the activity and ignore the mind. No, the mind has to be engaged in those activities. Otherwise, why is it he's going along, he's chanting, he's the best devotee in the temple, and one day, bang, he's gone. And how many of those were there in your temple? Why? Because one day, suddenly the mind went, hey, what about me? And then they're gone. And the soul identified with the mind. This is what we're discussing. This is a real reality. It's due to this ignoring the mind and dealing with it and accepting the mind, you know, as one point, and accepting the mind as us. Therefore, there is so much social and devotional disruption. While simply if we accept that the mind is real, we have to deal with it, but it's not us, then so much problem goes away. The mind wants this, but it's not me, and that's not good, so why should I bother? It wants to do something. It wants to be active, so then be active. But why be active for ourselves? It's so much better to be active for Krishna. You get what you want anyway. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I'm hungry. I have a friend. I could just feed myself. Right? Then, I'm physically satisfied, but emotionally I'm not, and my friend is really not. Right? Now, if I work on the principle of feed my friend, you know, and like that, then they're going to be satisfied. I'm also going to eat in the process. And emotionally, then it's been taken care of and a relationship has been developed. So, in both cases, you ate. So, which is better? Right? So, if the mind accepts that connecting to the Lord and serving the Lord, everything we require we'll get. But this is where we don't understand that. We'll think, by serving the Lord, I give up everything for myself. Right? I've offered nice prasad to Krishna, but I will not enjoy that prasad. Right? I didn't make the prasad for my enjoyment, but when I'm taking the prasad, it's very enjoyable. Why won't it be? It's Krishna. You know what I'm saying? The soul is satisfied in connection with Krishna. Does that make sense? But we tend to think, as like the impersonalist, no, any kind of enjoyment, I must throw it out if it's going to be spiritual. I've actually heard devotees say enjoying prasad is maya. You know what I'm saying? So they do like this in anything. They want to be married, they have to be married, but being happy in that family, they'll call it maya. So they'll do their best to mess it up. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that it's not what's being done. It's whether it's being done for Krishna or it's not being done for Krishna. Right? Eating is not maya. Right? It's a fact of life. They do it in the spiritual world. It goes on here in the material world. What makes it spiritual and material is whether it's connected to Krishna or whether it's not connected to Krishna. That's all. Right? That's the whole point. Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to discern. Otherwise, it'll just be, oh, we just chant Hare Krishna. Great. Let's run the society like that. But I don't see that going on. You know, I'm saying that's what's told to the two or three brahmacharis and brahmacharinis that still somehow or other happen to be still in a temple somewhere. But the other 300 to 500 devotees out in the congregation don't work according to that. And why? Because they're not accepting the mind. And not working with it. You know, they're saying, I'm being real, but what's so real about identifying with your desires? No. Deal with them, but don't identify with them. I'm hungry. I need to eat. That's fine. But I can't, I'm not this hunger. I'm not this need. No, it's there because the body requires it. Right? The mind requires, the senses require. But that doesn't make it me. Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to identify. Then we can engage nicely in devotional service. Because why don't we engage is because the mind has another idea. But the mind doesn't see how it can be by, you know, be brought in line with Krishna. Right? You want to eat, fine. That's being real. But eat, take prasad. Yes.
So Maharaj, are you saying that if we accept this point, that the mind is there, it is real, we need to accept that and then get on with things?
Yes.
Is that more or less what you're...
That's basically what we're saying. Because it's not an accepted platform. It's like you just ignore it, or like we discussed in the beginning, you just stop it, you just control it, you just... That's great! But the thing is how many are doing that? And how many who have said to do that are still doing that? A few are doing. But there's a lot who used to say that and are not. And now they're saying, we're just being practical or we're being real. Right? But it's not more practical or real. Because it's still not identifying the mind's desires have to be transferred to Krishna. Guna and karma. Right? Means, what is your nature? That's based on the mind, not on something else. Gita says that the body is based on the mind. The mind has a particular set of desires, so then you have, based around the mind, all the senses are grouped. And that produces your specific form. Does that make sense? So, therefore, in taking care of even the needs of the body, you still have to deal with the mind, because the body came from the mind. So actually, you're trying to satisfy the mind, not the body. Right? The body needs to eat, but if I don't give you the right kind of food, you're not satisfied. Right? And it might not even be assimilated by the body, even though it's assimilatable food. Does that make sense?
In relation to sleep, I heard that you need about 15 minutes for all the elements to nourish the body, but you need the rest of the time for the mind to digest everything that's gone through the day.
When you sleep?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So much going on.
So much going on. Okay. Yes. No, let me say, yes. I think the whole concept of the sleep we'll get into you know, very deeply in the future chapters, like that. Yes, yes.
Marsh, when the body is engaged in some menial activity and the mind is not fully absorbed in that activity, and the way I see it, we can be focused on chanting the holy name or the contemplation of the philosophy, like the manana aspect. But can it be said that one is superior to the other, that it's better to be focused on the holy name than to, you know, come up with some preaching schemes or...
So is it when the mind, when you're doing some activity that's fairly routine, and the mind, you can do the activity efficiently but not necessarily be absorbed in it, the mind can think of something else, is it better to be chanting or absorbed in, you know, developing, contemplating service and other things? They're non-different. Because Sankirtan means that it includes everything. Because the point is this, one is chanting, that's one's own position in existence. But then the idea is then there's going to be a relationship with the Lord and others. Right? So even in the chanting, we see it goes through stages. The name, the form, the qualities, pastimes. Right? So once it gets to pastimes, then you're talking about interaction. Right? Up to that point, then it's some form of appreciation. Right? The name, that it's non-different from Krishna, form, Krishna's form is very nice, his qualities are even more expanded than that, but his pastimes are his interaction with the devotees. Right? That becomes even more special. Does that make sense? So now, in that pastime, there has to be interaction. So there must be attraction, there must be, you know, to something activity, the attachment that's there and everything. Like that. Can you hear? Otherwise, we can move forward. Interesting, the weather, because it's normally, this would be a storm. So instead of the water coming this way, it would basically be going this way. But, somehow or another, nowadays we get the rainy season rain in the storm season, and we get sometimes the storms in the rainy season. Okay. Does that make sense?
And couldn't you expand from that? That it's okay, it's not different when you're chanting your japa to think like
when you're chanting your japa
lectures,
to think of something else.
Yeah.
Okay. In one sense, yes, that's better than contemplating something else. But in another sense, it is service to be absorbed in the name. So that absorption in the name, that itself is natural. But we see in this is that you're dealing in absorption in the name is generally you're dealing with that attraction or attachment to Krishna. Right? So even though they're absorbed, there's still going to be active service. You know what I'm saying? The devotees of Vrindavan are completely attached to Krishna and completely attracted. But because of that, they're doing activity. Right? So because of their attachment, they perform service. So because of the prayojana, right, then there is abhideya. Same way as said here, if it's connected to Aniruddha, the mind. The mind is connected to the Lord of the mind, Aniruddha, the mode of goodness. That's in the state of prayojana. That will mean that then your activities, your abhideya, will be Krishna conscious. But if it's not connected to Aniruddha, the mind, you know, then it will be absorbed in the mundane. So the goal is mundane, the activities will be mundane. So if the goal is Krishna, the activities will be Krishna conscious. The goal is mundane, the activities will be mundane. Yeah. So that's the whole why technically they're mentioning Aniruddha and being absorbed in Aniruddha. Right? Because then that elevates it to goodness, and then in that state, then you can properly perform devotional service. Does that make sense? Yes.
About his mind, I
also hold the mind is nice, but this is better. Let's chant Hare Krishna, let's serve Krishna, let this. And if mind agrees, then no problem.
Then it's fine, no problem. Just get it to agree.
So still we can decide it to not.
Yes, but why is it that you're even making that discussion in the first place? What's the basis of it?
But if mind is loud.
No, but you're going by right now. Go back some years. Was there any discussion of Krishna consciousness? No. So at some point you had the mind had to accept. The intelligence showed, okay, you're dealing in material life. You're not satisfied. Here is spiritual life. The people who are doing it seem to be happy. And the book, what it gives is very logical and very practical. That the intelligence can identify. The mind has to accept that. Having accepted that, you took up Krishna consciousness. So now the basic platform that the mind is working on is Krishna consciousness. So then, if you can, through the intelligence, show that there is something that's more Krishna conscious than another thing, then basically, if the mind is committed to its earlier decision of Krishna consciousness, it will accept that. But if it's become distracted by material desire, even though the basis of being in Krishna consciousness is to be Krishna conscious and to accept things favorable, if the attachments is so much stronger and the identification is so much greater in that direction, then when the intelligence comes up with these points, the mind may not accept. So still you're dealing with the mind. The intelligence shows what are the differences and what is the commonality. Right? In other words, you can analyze the field with the intelligence and figure out what each element of the field is going to add to your action that you're going to perform with the mind and senses. Then it's up to the mind to accept it. Right? That's why it's saying that,
So it's being the mind is sticking to something, it's attachment.
Yes. Attachment is what the mind does. It's what it does best. Right? Intelligence has nothing to do with attachment. Intelligence is simply discrimination. Okay? That's the point. Attraction and attachment, that is the mind. Differentiating the elements of the field, applying the skills that one has on the environment that you're dealing with it, that's intelligence. Right? In other words, the Sankarshan aspect of Sambandha, where you're dealing with the field and analyzing it, the intelligence part of application in Abhideya and Vasudev, these are what the intelligence does. But the attraction to that field is Prajumna, and the attachment or need is Aniruddha, that's the mind. So we see is that you're dealing with this element and you know where they're overlapping like this. Right? But that common point is Abhideya. That's where the mind and the intelligence are functioning together at the same time. Otherwise, it's more prominently one or more prominently the other. You understand? It means a man is alone, he thinks masculine, he does masculine. A woman's alone, she thinks feminine, she does feminine. You put the two together, then they have to work together and find the common ground. You understand? So that's Abhideya. Abhideya is where the intelligence and the mind cooperate together in a balanced way to effectively get something done. Is that okay? Yeah. Something else? Yeah.
The Maharaj, you mentioned this, that devotees may be like rootic tapas and sada root in a sort of way. So I was thinking that this white sadhana bhakti, one would give an argument that it's giving more focus to this external regulation of the mind than
external regulation of the mind, but how would there be an external regulation when the mind is internal? You can externally regulate the body, but the mind you have to direct. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we're saying, is be effective in your direction. Otherwise the mind will make up what it wants to do. Because it has some ideas. The mind wants to be happy. It wants to, you know, feel the security of control and the satisfaction of enjoyment. Right? So now it either has through worked out its own things or heard from others. Right? Or experienced things. So through whatever it is, then it has some idea of what it wants to do. Then it's a matter of directing that in a favorable way towards Krishna. Right? Means initially, it means ideally it's favorable towards Krishna, at least initially it's towards Krishna. It may be still more favorable to yourself. Right? But it's directed at Krishna. Then, as that becomes established, then you start redirecting it finer, that it's actually for Krishna's happiness. Does that make sense? So that's what you're trying to do. So it's not a matter of externals here. This word external and internal, that's very nice, but that's in relationship to... it's in relationship to the internal process of the mind being absorbed in Krishna. Does that make sense? So this thing of external and internal, it's not something that it's like these, we've heard these words and now we have our little stereotyped way of applying them. And as soon as it's external, then it's bad. Because basically speaking, probably everything that you do in a day has an external aspect. Even if you say, we're just going to do absorb in the eternal, internal, we're just going to hear about Krishna and his pastimes. And what are you going to do that with? You're going to get out a book, right? Quite external, right? Knock on wood, it's like solid, right? Made out of a tree, right? Like that. Then you're going to use your hands, external, right? Your fingers, you know? You're going to use your eyes, external. You're going to use your tongue to read it and ears to hear it. You're going to have a place to sit down, external. So what's not external? External is the understanding that, something that has an internal aspect and you're not recognizing that. Okay. So technically speaking, the class ends now, so if that makes you advantage to move to a different place so you don't get wet, then now is the time. What we can do is we'll end the class and then we can continue if there's any further questions, or you can chant or whatever you want to do. Did we get... Yeah, we did.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
jai
Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi you might find this side, or if it's a problem, you might find upstairs works a little better. Is there some walls there? Let me take this stuff to work.
My next round is
prelims starts. Yeah, we had to win out in the
Then, you know,